This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's blue. It's electric. It goes 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. And it's not a Tesla. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday, today, the 18th day of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We are going to lead with a story about brand and brand history and the requirements of a company in a changing economy and on a warming planet. We took a quick detour out to the west side of L.A. yesterday, an airplane hangar out by the airport rented for the evening by the Ford Motor Company, the public unveiling of an all-electric Ford Mustang SUV, the iconic Mustang, making it electric, and then, oh yeah, it's an SUV. A big deal for a company that's made some big investments in electric, but which hasn't, until now, arguably, had much to show for it. So that is where I started with Ford CEO Jim Hackett at the big reveal last night, standing next to the car, pointing out that one messes with the Mustang at one's peril.
It's actually phrased by me as you're messing with the heart of the company.
Yeah, no joke.
And so the diligence we put into it and the care is extraordinary.
Am I overstating the case if I say this is the future of the company?
I think we've got a lot of great things going, but let's just say I'm taking it as serious as anything that I've got on my plate right now. So I'm really confident that we've got this right, but because we're taking reservations, we get to tell pretty quickly if customers love this.
Who are you competing against with this car?
Well, in a way, the world will see it as a Tesla kind of competitive product.
For sure.
And, you know, we're sitting in an area where Tesla has...
Tesla's literally right next door. I mean, you go out of this hangar and you take a right and Tesla's there.
Had a lot of success.
SpaceX is there.
I get to joke that, you know, I compete with a rocket scientist every day. Yeah. The thing that you have to understand about Ford is we build an F-150 every 53 seconds.
Yeah, the most popular truck in America,
which
right?
is in the world.
In the world.
This is the number one vehicle made in the world. So the world's not seen a competitor like us in this realm. So I'm really optimistic that what we will be doing is offering customers who've not thought about electrification, even from Tesla, the opportunity to switch to something like this.
Pull back for me, and let's talk big picture, global car industry, the competitive environment, and frankly, global trade. You said a year ago that the steel and aluminum tariffs had cost your company $1 billion. Is it now $2 billion and counting?
Over 2 to 3 years, it got over $1.7 billion, and because there was some relief, but
yeah.
I think the bigger principle that I've been public about is that trade... For it to work, it requires equilibrium. If you look up the definition of that, it's two opposing forces that balance each other. So the notion of us having two countries like China and the U.S. being in opposition about trade is not depressing. We've got to agree on the way we work together. That equilibrium will cause the stock market to boom because there's a lot of investment that's going to go back and forth. And I believe our president actually did a good job of making it clear of what we need from our side. I don't think there's any dismissiveness now coming from the other side. And so that's a good thing. But I think it's time for us to bring it to conclusion.
Where are you going to make this thing, by the way?
Well, our Mustangs at large are made in Flat Rock, Michigan. We produce over 100,000 a year there. This vehicle will be down in the center of Mexico. It was always the place.
I can hear the president on the phone right now.
Yeah, but this is a cool trade because we didn't lose any jobs for this to happen because we had capacity sitting there. We can't have idle plants.
Right.
And we just signed a UAW agreement where we made a bigger commitment for investment in the United States. So they're very happy with us.
I want to dig into that equilibrium thing for a minute,
okay,
because it's an interesting concept. And yet I think a lot of people out there would say that what has happened is that the president has put global trade into disequilibrium. He has disrupted something that, while not ideal, had some measure of balance to it. How do we recover from this?
Well, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for the President of the United States, but let me just suggest there's a large population of business people who agree with him that we needed to be more assertive about what America needed in this burgeoning relationship with China.
Yeah.
It's just grown in an extraordinary way, unlike any time in history. So this was bound to happen. So I think my endorsement was, if there's a time to have a decisions about it and a discussion, this was good. It's just that it needs to get resolved.
Do you think the American economy is fundamentally strong, and that's why the president is able to prosecute this trade war?
Well, I think he's had a hand in helping its strength. I think the kind of optimism he brought for business investment, the way he reduced some of the legislation that was kind of hampering the growth of the GDP, I think that's all fared well. You know, the car industry's had a great 5-year run here, and you'd have to say that the president was sitting near that. There's also, I think, a tighter handle on American workers and their future. There's an obligation, I feel it, as because I ran another company,
yeah,
where you've got to be highly considerate of making sure you're taking care of that workforce in your global footprint decisions. Now, the tipping point here is we can't make everything in America because this new vehicle is going to be sold around the world. So you actually need the benefit of different kinds of suppliers to average your costs down. But your net employment, if it grows, it's good for everybody. And that's what's happening. Our net employment in the United States has grown in the last 5 years.
What happens if this car doesn't hit?
You're talking to a guy
who... That's a long silence from
Jim
Hackett,
you know,
right there.
It's the kind of thing, I'm really competitive. So I just don't see losing on this score. I think that whatever we hear from our customers, we've designed this so we can make adaptations the way the software inside the vehicle can help its performance. So I don't feel that at all.
Jim Hackett, thanks a lot. Appreciate your
Thank
time,
you,
sir.
Kai, for the coverage.
Radio magic being what it is, Mr. Hackett and I actually talked for about a half an hour or so, more about the car, more about how he runs Ford, also the parallels between getting Jim Harbaugh to coach Michigan football and betting the ranch on an electric Mustang SUV. Trust me, the analogy holds up. All of it is up now on our Corner Office podcast. We shot a video while we were out there as well. Ford shares flat on the day, same as it happens as the major indices. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Manufacturers and retailers in the vaping industry look to have rung up a lobbying win today. President Trump, it's being widely reported, has decided to back off an earlier pledge to ban the sale of most flavored e-cigarettes. Here's Marketplace's Andy Euler with what's going on there.
Pipe Dreams is a smoke shop on the University of Texas campus in Austin. It sells pipes, cigarettes, vaping liquid.
The e-cigarettes, like the disposable ones, have been really popular over here.
Store manager Dasa Frudensprung says one brand in particular has driven business here.
When the Juul came out, that's kind of when it really took off.
Frudensprung says she has to keep up with federal regulation because that dictates what she stocks in her store. Labor Department data shows that small vape shops like this one have been the fastest growing retail segment for the last decade. Estimates put the number of vape stores in the U.S. at anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000. Ray Story with the Tobacco Vapor Electronic Cigarette Association says a federal ban on nicotine flavors would be a death sentence for vape shops.
Nicotine is odorless and flavorless, so therefore, if you ban flavors, it's a de facto ban on the entire category.
While mom-and-pop vape stores have proliferated, the biggest player is still Juul, which sells its products in about 100,000 gas stations and convenience stores. Desmond Jensen with the Public Law Center at Hamline University is disappointed with the Trump administration's apparent reversal.
The The longer we delay action on flavors, the more kids get hooked on e-cigarettes.
But facing criticism and lawsuits for marketing to young people, Juul already got rid of its e-cig flavors, except tobacco and menthol. The company confirmed last month it plans to cut roughly 500 jobs, or about 15% of its workforce, by the end of the year. Juul did not get back to us before deadline. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Other than Ford, a 100-plus-year-old heavy old-line manufacturing company with $160 billion in annual revenue, arguably the corporate story of the day besides Ford is cosmetics, specifically the fate of Kylie Cosmetics, founded in 2015 by then 18-year-old reality TV star Kylie Jenner. Coty, which owns CoverGirl and Max Factor, among a bunch of more established brands, announced today it's taking a major stake in Kylie Cosmetics, a majority stake, in fact, for $600 million, which works out to a little bit more than $2 for every social media follower that Kylie Jenner has, as of today, anyway. And it values the company at $1.2 billion. As Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, a company known for its, shall we say, older brands would love to tap into that young following.
Coty was founded in 1904 and owns legacy favorites like CoverGirl, Wella, and Clairol. Kylie Cosmetics launched on social media in 2015.
I'm just obsessed with lip liners and lipsticks in general, and I can't leave the house without them. I just decided to take matters into my own hands.
And when she did, Kylie Jenner had such a following, her first lip kits sold out within seconds. Lauren Goodsit is a beauty analyst with Mintel. She says influencers are a growing force in the cosmetics industry. Another success story is Glossier, a makeup and skincare company founded by beauty blogger Emily Weiss.
What they do when they're generating any new type of product is they really look at the comments that their consumers are posting on their Instagram, on their social media, and they take into account what consumers are asking for.
But can established brands just buy their way into that relationship? Goodsit says Lancome's collaboration with influencer Chiara Ferragni has been working well. But attaching to a name can be risky, too, says Linda Bolton-Weiser, an analyst with D.A. Davidson.
Kylie at age 20 is likely different than what she'll be like at age 30. So one of the issues is what happens to the brand once the person undergoes changes in their life.
Stars can fade, too. Take the cosmetics company co-founded by celebrity makeup artist Bobby Brown in 1991. Weiser says today, Bobby Brown is one of Estee Lauder's weakest brands. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I am a person who is very skeptical of most things.
So actually liking a product, it's kind of a big deal. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 31 points today, a tenth percent, 28,036. The NASDAQ found 9 points, also a tenth percent, 85.49. The S&P 500 rose just a point. We'll call that flat percentage-wise, 31 and 22. Amy Scott looked at what's behind cosmetics company Coty buying a $600 million stake in Kylie Jenner's beauty business. Coty glammed up 2.6% today. Competitor Revlon, another longtime brand, down 0.9%. Some news about the pot industry today. The Canadian company Aurora Cannabis is still feeling the heat after releasing poor first quarter results on Friday. The company said revenue declined and that it plans to delay or cancel some expansion projects. Aurora Cannabis burned off more than 16% today. Bonds rose. Yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.81%. You're listening to Marketplace. Hey, everybody, it's Kai. So look, the NCAA is making billions, the coaches are making millions, and the students, they get nothing?
So, for instance, my YouTube video, right, has around 50 million views. And so it's like, where is that money going? We don't see that ever. So we don't know where that money went. Did it go to NCAA? Did it go to UCLA? Did it go to athletics? Now that I've graduated, I still don't get to see any of that.
This week on Make Me Smart, gymnast Caitlin Ohashi tells us why she thinks the NCAA's rules need to change. Check it out.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Marielle Sagard did a story for us last month pointing out that a big retail and consumer brand trade group, the American Apparel and Footwear Association by name, had asked the federal government to put Amazon on its list of, and this is the quote from the text, notorious markets, that's regulation, for counterfeit goods, as in there are a lot of them on Amazon. And we promised we would get back to you about some of the more suspect items that Marielle had gotten there. So here you go.
As soon as I hand Arielle Elia one of the items, she's skeptical.
It's just kind of in this Mylar bag.
Elia is an expert on counterfeit goods at the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City. The product in the Mylar bag was advertised on Amazon as a luxury fashion designer iPhone case.
But if it were to be from a luxury brand, it would definitely be in probably a beautiful box of some sort.
She pulls out the case. It's brown with gold lettering that says Louis Vuitton Paris. It has the LV logo on the back. She's already pretty sure it's a fake. And then I tell her it cost $22.99.
Oh my God. Okay. Louis Vuitton typically sells their cell phone cases anywhere from, if it's a simple one with maybe just the monogram, it's about $370.
Others cost well over $1,000. Okay, so we didn't need an authenticator to tell us that a $23 Louis Vuitton iPhone case is a fake. Trisha Torres has a rule of thumb for this kind of stuff.
You know, if something seems like too good of a deal to be true, yes, it is too good to be true. You're not getting the quality item that you think you're getting.
Torres is vice president of Aspects, a small company that makes bird feeders that sell for between $15 and $80. She emailed me after our last story to tell us that her products have been counterfeited and sold on Amazon, alongside fake designer iPhone cases like the one we bought, and fake handbags and sneakers and t-shirts and dietary supplements. A couple weeks ago, I visited the Aspects factory in Rhode Island.
All of the product that Aspects manufactures, everything that we make, ships from this location.
In 2016, Torres got a phone call from a customer who'd bought an Aspects product from a third-party seller, a company that uses Amazon as a sales platform. In 2018, almost 60% of Amazon's product sales came from third parties. That's where the counterfeit problem is. The customer was calling Torres about a hummingbird feeder.
Basically, it's a clear bowl that holds the nectar for the hummingbirds to feed from, and then there's a red cover that kind of just snaps on the top. And what happened is it just was not snapping on.
Aspects offers a lifetime guarantee, so Torres told the customer to send it back. Then she sent it to her supplier in Massachusetts.
They came back to us with, "We didn't make this."
The hummingbird feeder was a fake, but a convincing one. It even had her company's name and phone number on it.
A lot of sleepless nights started with that phone call saying, how did this happen and what do we do now?
She looked on Amazon and realized there were a lot of fake Aspects products. She ordered some.
And then as we got them here and looked at them, we could see minor details, spelling, things that were spelled wrong. The packaging was a little bit off. The color was off.
But customers would never know the difference until something went wrong. So Aspects paid nearly $10,000 to file its existing trademarks in the databases for U.S. and Chinese customs.
We basically made them almost like a show and tell. This is what is wrong. You know, this is what we're looking for.
A couple months later, officials seized a container of 3,800 counterfeit Aspects products headed from China to a street address in the Bronx. Then another container. Even so, Aspects kept getting phone calls from disgruntled people who thought they'd bought its products. They'd say, the suction cups on my bird feeder stopped sticking.
People will just be like, well, just send me the suction cups. Just send me the suction cups. And I'm like, okay, we can. But the problem is I'm replacing parts now for a product that I didn't manufacture.
The company tried telling people, we didn't make this product. Please return it to Amazon. That didn't go over well.
Their knee-jerk reaction was that we were just being dishonest and not standing behind a lifetime guarantee.
Tori says this did irreparable damage to Aspects' reputation, and she estimates that counterfeits on Amazon have cost her company about $1.5 million in sales over the past few years. That's around 4% of Aspects' revenue. Amazon will take down listings of counterfeit products when they're pointed out, but Tori says it's a game of whack-a-mole.
Joe Bad Guy can already have started another storefront by the next day.
Amazon declined an interview, but it said in a statement that last year it blocked more than 3 billion suspected bad listings, that's Amazon's phrase, from its site. So far, courts have been reluctant to hold Amazon responsible for fake products sold by third parties. We bought a couple counterfeit items on Amazon, and since our initial story, the sellers are still active. One of them is currently offering an earbud case with the Gucci logo for $13.99. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Marielle asked some experts to check out a bunch of the things she bought on Amazon. You can see our quality assurance follow-up at marketplace.org. Welcome news today for shareholders of Peloton, the fitness technology company probably best known for its exercise bikes, the ones that let you stream a spin class, which is a cycling class for us lay people, from the comfort of your home. Peloton shares closed today at $30.25, above, for the first time, its initial public offering price of $29 back in September. While the company's business model might still be trying to find its footing, it does have one critical thing going for it, Peloton does. Customers, enthusiastic ones too. Amanda Mull wrote about Peloton's clientele for The Atlantic in a story headlined, "I Joined a Stationary Biker Gang." Amanda, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
You have, in the course of your reportage here, and I guess maybe in life as well, you've taken these classes. What are they like?
Yes, I went to the studio where Peloton films their classes, which is open to the public to take classes every day because they need people to sort of fill out the look of being in a spin class. You know, I am a person who is very skeptical of most things, but I found Peloton pretty compelling. I was really set to hate it, but I felt very supported and very positive about the whole thing.
Well, and that's the gist of this piece, that it's really the community that Peloton is building that is their competitive advantage, you think?
Yeah. I took a class at one of Peloton's competitors, a spin studio, just to get an idea, because I have never felt, you know, I'm a fat person. I have never felt welcomed in any of these spaces. And in this other class, this more sort of traditional type of spin class, you know, the instructor was up there telling everybody that they needed to pedal harder so they could slim down and wear a tank top, you know, at the then upcoming warm weather. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, in the back fat and already wearing a tank top. So I don't, you know, and it's just like little sort of casual things like that that make a lot of people feel like they can't start working out, like they have to lose a lot of weight or change themselves before they're even allowed to take part in something like this.
So how do you reconcile what you write about in this piece, which is Peloton's culture of acceptance of you for who you are getting on that bike with their advertising. And for those who might not have seen it, they're always in really she-she apartments that overlook a city, and it's gorgeous and all glass walls, and the people are perfect, and so is their apartment at an annual rent of probably $11,000.
Yes, I think that one of the things that Peloton is going to have to overcome is the idea that they had sort of built themselves up in people's minds as something exclusive and something for corner office type folks.
Right.
It's going to take some time, and I don't know if they're going to be able to do that, you know, super effectively. But I think that they've understood that they've tapped into a desire that is far larger than just rich people.
It also takes $2,200 to buy one of these bikes.
Yes, the bikes are expensive.
Yeah.
At a SoulCycle or a Flywheel, your spin classes are going to cost $30 to $40 a piece. And if you buy a bike in your home and take the classes at home, the bike costs like, I think it was like $60 a month plus $40 for the membership while you're paying off the bike. So if you're the type of person who wants to take three spin classes a week, you know, the math works out okay. But, you know, there's so many people who don't want to finance things, who can't get financing. The price tags on the bike and the treadmill and the things they make are, you know, pretty shocking at the beginning.
Well, what about you? I mean, you went into this expecting to hate it. You called your editor when you were done and you said you think you love it. Did you buy the bike? Or are you going to buy a bike?
I would buy the bike if I had space in my apartment for it. Unfortunately, I live in a New York apartment. But I did come home after that first Peloton class and sort of look around my apartment and be like, okay, what can I move? Yeah. What can I get rid of? What, you know, where might this go? For the story, I talked to a group of plus-size Peloton riders who, for a lot of them, it has been really, really key that they can do things at home because, you know, people who are just starting to work out a lot of times feel like people at gyms or in exercise classes are going to make fun of them or they're going to look like they're obviously newcomers. And that is something that holds a lot of people back. So I think that there are a lot of people who like sort of want to believe. Right. And Peloton's success or failure is going to hinge on whether or not they can make the math work out for people, I think.
Amanda Mull writes a column at The Atlantic. It's called Material World. Most recently about Peloton and the Stationary Biker Gang, which I love that title, I got to tell you. Amanda, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me.
This final note on the way out today, We Report, You Decide edition. President Trump and Fed Chair Jay Powell had a meeting this morning. Relatively rare, these kinds of meetings are. So here with the public interpretation of today's meeting by each side in this not always copacetic relationship. President Trump tweeted, quote, "Everything was discussed, including interest rates, negative interest, low inflation, easing, dollar strength and its effect on manufacturing, trade with China, EU and others, etc." The Fed said, in relevant part, "The Federal Open Market Committee will set monetary policy, as required by law, to support maximum employment and stable prices, and will make those decisions based solely on careful, objective, and non-political analysis." So, now you know. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrials up 31 today, about a 10%. NASDAQ up 9, also about a 10%. S&P 500 basically flat. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Andy Corbin, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Bennett Purser. Eliza Mills is our special projects producer. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Soul the Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Soul the Story are available now.